This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit villageofbedfordpark.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
It's 12:03 on Monday afternoon, August 17th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. The Noon Business Hour is sponsored by finishingchicago.com. The fall hiring season is here and opportunity may be knocking. We'll cover that in our next segment. But first, the busy week ahead on Wall Street includes new numbers on housing and jobs, while major retailers like Walmart and Target report earnings, putting the health of the U.S. consumer in the spotlight. We welcome in Brian Westbury, Chief Economist, First Trust Advisors in Wheaton. Brian, thanks for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. Let's start out with the numbers that are already out. The Empire State Manufacturing Survey is out, the strongest number in 5 years, indicating that those supply chains are humming.
Yes, they are, Rob. It's one of the things that I always remind people today is that these data centers that we're building for AI are truly driving growth. In other words, about 15-20% of the economy, which is data centers right now, they're growing 15-20% a year. The rest of the economy isn't growing quite as fast, and that's just something to remember. It reminds me a little bit of the housing boom of the early 2000s and the dot-com boom when we were laying all that fiber optic cable during the late 1990s. If you kind of take out of that one big sector, either fiber optic cable or then housing or now data centers, the economy's growing, but it's not growing quite as fast as it looks on the surface.
And when we talk about the Empire State Manufacturing Survey, does this cover only New York State, or is it more of a broader examination of manufacturing conditions in the Northeast?
Yeah, it's really the Northeast. It'll have some New Jersey in there. There is a Philadelphia Fed index, but I'm sure this includes some Pennsylvania as well. So it is that Northeast sector of the economy. And yes, part of it is housing. Part of it is just we're probably onshoring some production because of tariffs. But a lot of this is electrical equipment, corrugated metal, all the things, steel, all the things that you need to build these data centers. And we are investing somewhere between $700 billion and $1 trillion in these data centers this year. So it's having an impact on manufacturing in all parts of the economy.
Some of the highlights of the upcoming week include a report on housing starts tomorrow, Thursday. Leading economic indicators and jobless claims, that's a weekly number. But then we have the minutes from the most recent Fed meeting on Wednesday. And what are Fed watchers, what do they want to see?
Yeah, so right now there's a big divide between those people who think we ought to be raising interest rates and those who think we ought to be lowering interest rates. So on the raising interest rate side, we did have a pickup of inflation during, after the original invasion of Iran, and then that continues to, it's off and on and off and on, and so oil prices have stayed elevated. But the last 2 months of inflation data have been really calm. In fact, negative 2 months ago. So I would argue that right now interest rates are likely to stay flat because there's kind of an equal argument on each side. And then that brings me to one last point. I think people have underappreciated, if you will, the impact that immigration has had on the U.S. So for the 4 years prior to Trump, we had somewhere between 2 to 2.5 million immigrants coming into the United States every year. Since then, the last 18 months, it's not hard to make an argument that we've had a slight net negative immigration number. And then what this is doing, it's having an impact on wages, lower income jobs are seeing wages rise faster than higher income jobs. We are also seeing the demand for housing fall, and what's happening is rental costs are going down. So all of that is also a reason for keeping interest rates stable. So there's a lot going on in the economy today. We are growing. Inflation appears to be at least calming down a little bit. And I would argue the Fed actually ends up staying on the sidelines for the rest of this year.
Brian Westbury, Chief Economist, First Trust Advisors in Wheaton. Thank you for joining us.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday for planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
As summer winds down, fall can be prime time for a job search, with Chicago employers ramping up hiring and candidates refocusing. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Jason Wachtel, Managing Partner, J.W. Michaels & Company. Jason, thank you for joining us today. And that could be music to the ears of some job seekers who may be frustrated by this low-fire, low-hire economy. That jump across the street is proving to be more difficult compared to recent years. And what can people expect this fall?
Well, what we've been seeing at J.W. Michaels is the hiring has picked up this year significantly where it was previous. So as a company, we're seeing a lot of new opportunities come in August, where generally this is the dead time of year. So I'm very optimistic that if what we're seeing in August is really ramping up, after Labor Day is sort of the final push of hiring, and we expect it to be a very busy fall winter of hiring.
Now, if you want to take advantage of this environment, and it's been a couple of years since you were in the recruiting playing field, what are some things you have to do?
The first thing I would do, I would not wait until after Labor Day. If you're looking for a job, this is a great time to get your resume updated. Go to Indeed, Monster, LinkedIn, all the normal job sites, and get your resume out there. You might not get a response right now, but after Labor Day, when everybody's back to work and people have to have their numbers, they have to hire before the end of the year or they lose the headcount, this is the time where you put it in there, because when you get back from Labor Day, the hiring really starts.
Now, what are some things that you can do to make sure your resume is optimized for 2026? Because there's been so much discussion about AI screening tools, even AI first round interviewers. What can you do to make sure that you are built for this era?
So what we've seen with AI, if you're applying to the biggest companies, then you might have experience dealing with AI from a recruiting perspective. But most companies outside of the Amazons of the world, your first round interview is going to be with a human being. But putting that aside, you need to have some kind of AI knowledge. Every company is either using AI or is about to use AI. And if you want to separate yourself from your competition, make sure you are AI fluent, whatever that may mean for that person, so you can use that as an advantage going to the new company versus being at a disadvantage.
And then when it comes to really updating your LinkedIn profile or even updating your resume, when it comes to crafting that profile or crafting that resume, how much weight should be given or time to narrative versus accomplishments?
It's a good question. I think if I was applying for a job today, I'd want to, whatever job you're in, you'd want to mention how you were efficient, how you saved money for the company, and also, no matter what job it is, how you have been able to embrace AI. Those three key indicators will be something that everybody should have on their resume, no matter what job you're applying for, and it will definitely give you a leg up versus somebody who doesn't include that in their resume.
And then let's talk about the power of networking versus applying to jobs online. Even though you can fill out thousands of applications online, how does that one cup of coffee potentially supercharge your search?
So what we tell candidates who are looking for jobs, looking for a job is a second full-time job if you are currently employed. So yes, you should spend every day going online, applying to jobs, but you should say, I want to have three or four impactful meetings in person, whether it's coffee, lunch, drink, or someone's office. Because if you can meet that person in person, that is so much more effective than just applying online. So looking for a job, you got to be diligent online, but you should set a goal of meeting three or four people, let's say, in person for networking perspective. And that is the way, if I was conducting my job search, that's how I would want to do that.
And then lastly, Jason, before you take the jump, what are some questions you need to ask yourself about what you want out of that new job?
So what I always like to do is I like to put a list together of, on the left side, what's positive about my job, on the right side, what's negative upon my job. And when you're applying for the new job, you want to make sure that the negatives that you currently have are more positives in the other place. It can't just be about money, because that's sort of a dangerous perspective. You want to have the money make sense for you, but you also want to have a job that the parts that you don't like about your current job are not going to be the same things you don't like about the new job.
Jason Wachtel, Managing Partner, J.W. Michaels & Company in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, shoppers are showing up, but sometimes it feels like no one's interested in helping out. We'll explain that.
Discussing the news affecting your money, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Retailers spend plenty of time worrying about online competition, but the bigger problem may be what customers experience once they actually go into the physical store. We talked to Bob Fibb, CEO of the Retail Doctor in New York. Bob, thank you for joining us today. And this is something a lot of people say they experience when they go into a brick and mortar store, maybe that has been dealing with cutbacks and really, you know, making operations leaner to face online competition. And then they find the experience is so unpleasant, they don't go back. So let's talk about the dollars and cents of customer service.
Well, that's interesting because you're describing my new book, The Sales Floor Problem, why the money you're losing isn't coming from Amazon, it's walking out your front door. And, you know, this all started from me being in a department store last January, and I walked in and I was going to buy a top coat. And I walked around through 9 or 10 different people, whether they were on their phones or looking the other way. Didn't really want to help me. And I finally found a guy who looked up and he said, welcome. I'm like, that's good enough. So I bought the top coat, walked out the front door, and the doorman said, hey, sir, can I get you a taxi? And I was like, sure. So I made a video, though, before I got in the taxi, and I posted on LinkedIn. Within an hour, there were 1,000 comments, 55,000 views within a day, excuse me. Everyone saying the same thing. This is why I don't go back to stores. And yet, we are finding that people are buying things on marketplaces and used in all kinds of places. They're buying the brand. They just don't want to buy it in the store. And so the opportunity for retailers is fix the experience, and you probably fix your fortunes. But coming up with more discounts and more ways to say we value you, and yet you've experienced, I'm sure, when you walk into a store, they could care less.
Well, very quickly, Bob, thinking back to the grand old days of Marshall Fields in Chicago, where it was much the philosophy of give the lady what she wants. And if you were a salesperson there, I would imagine you went through a very extensive training course before you went on the floor. And trying to save money on customer service, how much leakage do you experience because you don't have that very assertive style of customer service?
Well, if you figure that a good store is converting 20% of the visitors to buy something, and that would be a great store, that would be great margin. That means 80% of people walked out your front door. For an average store, if you figure you multiply that, just a 5% increase, and we're talking like $3 to $5 million. It's huge, but people are harder to manage. And so the bean counters say, you know, cut them back, we'll manage it to our traffic. And yet you look at the smart retailers that have been out there, whether that's going to be, you certainly can look outside of retail now. I think, well, you could look at a Chick-fil-A, you could look at Costco, you could look at Trader Joe's. There are various other formats where they realize people are important to this business. And to your point, where would Marshall Fields be if they hadn't gotten distracted when Macy's bought them? And kind of went down too.
Bob Fibb, CEO of the Retail Doctor in New York. Thank you for joining us. Check out his book, The Sales Floor Problem. The sales you're missing aren't to Amazon, but they're walking out your front door.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. The Noon Business Hour continues, sponsored by FinishingChicago.com. Markets are lower today. Welcome in Gary Kaltbaum, President Kaltbaum Capital Management in Orlando. You can find him online at GaryK.com. Gary, thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. And the markets are slightly lower today. And how much of this is more profit-taking from last week, and how much of this is a little bit of Iran war anxiety?
Oh, I think there may be something else working, my friend. The 30-year yield is now above, got to go back 19 years now, and the 10-year yield is getting close. This is not good news. I've been a big believer that the direction of interest rates are half of the market, the other half being earnings. And I guess sometimes you can go 60-40, 40-60. And when you have a government running $40 trillion of debt and $2.2 trillion deficit this year, I'm wondering if it's waking up to it. I hope I am wrong. I say that because inflation, at least the rate of inflation, has come down. So bonds should probably not be doing this, but they are. And I can promise you, if they continue higher, that will provide a headwind. I'm watching the 10-year yield. I don't want it going through 4.8% and especially through 5%, because I think that's a pretty big psychological number. I think today, most definitely in the market, is feeling the brunt of it right now.
We do have a number of earnings reports this week that you might as well call a heat check on the quote-unquote real economy, and that is when the retailers step up to the plate. We have Walmart, we have Home Depot, and Lowe's. And what do you want to see out of those quarterly reports that indicate the consumer is still strong?
Yeah, and I think you also have a Target also. So that pretty much matters. First and foremost, I do not like the way the retail stocks are acting. A lot of them are turning very bearish right now. The last retail number we got was not in good shape. Plus, the amount of credit card debt out there is at record high. So definitely something to watch. What you always want to see is guidance from these companies and what the guidance is. And if they provide light, I think the market's already telling you that there's some issues with the consumer this second. And again, if interest rates keep going up, not good. And oil prices now are still, you know, above the $80 mark, and that's not great shape. I think I filled up yesterday at $4.15. Last year it was $3.15. And when you add that up for the average consumer out there, as well as petroleum, how many products are made with it, it does matter. So again, oil and yields are going to really dictate some policy. By the way, great earnings reports out of Wall Street.
Gary Kaltbaum, President, Kaltbaum Capital Management in Orlando, thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. You can find him at GaryK.com. Coming up next, why decluttering today could make downsizing tomorrow that much easier.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Owning less isn't just about clearing clutter. It can save you money, simplify your life, and ultimately give you more freedom. We welcome Lisa Stover, expert in senior transitions and owner of Presto Real Estate and Services in Naperville. Lisa, thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. And I don't think we really appreciate how much stuff we truly have until you have to move. And then you realize, wow, there was a lot of stuff in that closet or a lot of stuff on that shelf. And that clutter that you have that you probably haven't looked at in decades, that could potentially cost you a lot of time and a lot of money.
Yeah, you are so right about that. And it is a growing problem, but I think the problem's been there for a long time. We're just finally realizing it, because our population that's kind of aging out of their homes and needing to make some changes has all arrived at the same time, right? The largest generation, or one of the largest generations, is now 80 years old. And a lot of them can't stay where they are, and their adult children are like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do, right?
And then what's the psychology, though, behind keeping all of your stuff? Because either it's just you don't have the time to really tackle your clutter, or even though it's not quite a hoarding situation, some people always find some sort of sentimental value in all sorts of tchotchkes they have around the house. So how do you break that mindset?
Oh, gosh, it's such an individual thing. And when we meet with people, it runs the gamut. But the reality is that we think it grows overnight, that it actually multiplies itself. And I say that lovingly, because when adult children get to the home and say, oh my gosh, where did this come from, right? So, yeah, I mean, part of it is gifts. We gave our parents gifts for years and years, and they started these Department 56 collections, or Yadros, Hummels, depending on their age, and they loved them. And so for every birthday and Mother's Day and every occasion imaginable, we gave them another one. And now there are 150. And what, you know, we can't get 50 cents for a Hummel. So when you say, you know, that it's expensive, it is, because the reality is that cleaning it out and organizing it, maybe getting rid of it, can sometimes cost more than you're going to get for it. And it's a dance.
So
yeah.
What are some things that you can do either in the here and now as an older adult or as the child of an older adult to make sure that you're not dealing with that clutter later on, and also get rid of that clutter in such a way that maybe your chief concern is, well, I don't want all this stuff to go into a landfill. Is there something you can do to make sure it has a second life with someone?
Yes. Donation, estate sales. We talked about estate sales before, and that's a beautiful way to actually make some real money on the items that you have. The problem is you can't really live in your home and have an estate sale at the same time. It's tough to do that. So donating is a great way to do it. I think that bringing in an organizing expert, somebody who can help you go through it if your adult children aren't available or can't help you. Maybe they don't live close enough. Maybe you don't want to burden them, which is one of the reasons that people put this off so long, is that there just is a, you know, there's a, time is a commodity, right? And we don't have enough of it. So it's tough to answer your question in a blanket way. But I think bringing someone in to help, we always tell people, if you want to start this project on your own, start in a less emotional space, like a guest room closet that maybe has wrapping paper and old shoes and things that aren't super sentimental. Start with that. Get yourself a couple bags or boxes, one that's like keep and another that is discard, and start with, you know, eat that elephant one bite at a time. Don't get too crazy. Start with small projects if you're able, and work your way into those more sentimental projects that might involve reminiscing, right? Photos, family photos, or, you know, maybe items left if you've lost a loved one who's passed on, and it's been really hard to maybe go through their clothing or go through their dresser. There's a lot of circumstances that that affect the way we approach this.
Lisa Stover, expert in senior transitions, owner, Presto Real Estate and Services in Naperville. Thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. Join us at this time tomorrow for Travel Tuesday. And still to come, why doing less with your investments could make you more money.
Compounding your interest with an economy of words. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Stock Picker Monday. We spend a lot of time talking about individual stocks and trying to find that one company that could make us a lot of money. company. But for most investors, a much simpler strategy may ultimately prove to be more successful. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com. Thank you for joining us today, Mark. And it's the KISS principle here at work when we talk about investing in index funds. Just keep it simple. Simple. Stupid.
You're absolutely right. I think the simplest strategy, the one you referred to that also has, at least statistically, far better odds than almost anything else we can do, is simply to buy a broad stock market index fund with a very low expense ratio. And you can buy the entire U.S. stock market with one transaction with an exchange-traded fund that charges you only 2 or 3 basis points. That's like $2 or $3 for every $1,000 or $10,000, I mean, that you have invested, which is incredible. I mean, the idea that you can now buy the market for virtually no money with one transaction. And then the same thing is true for the international market. You can buy a piece of all international stocks, in effect, for almost as little money with one transaction. And it turns out the research shows that by doing that, you're going to beat at least 90, probably more than 90% of all your fellow investors who are going to be trying to pick individual stocks. And the way I talk to my clients about this is to ask them, what other pursuit in life can you do better than 90 or 95% of your competitors by not even trying? And yet that is the way stock market investing works out when it comes to picking stocks.
And we do the Stock Picker Monday segment, Mark. It's a great storytelling segment because you learn about different companies in different sectors and why they are doing well and why they can be primed for growth. And even though we all nurture this fantasy of, we've found this stock that grew by 200 or 300%. But the reality is, and as you point out, if you buy into an S&P 500 index fund, that's an 8% rate of return, and that's pretty healthy over time.
Well, that's right. I think the real Achilles heel of the index strategy, the KISS strategy that you and I are chatting about, isn't the statistical basis on its behalf, which I think is almost inescapable, but rather it's the psychological dimension. It's boring. And you quite rightly point out, when we talk about individual companies, it's fascinating. And we all like to think that we're smarter than the next guy and that we're going to be able to figure out which was the company that is going to provide that hundreds of percent return. But even though you probably know in your heart of hearts that an index fund does better, it's just simply boring and you don't want to do it.
Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com, based in Washington. Thank you for joining us today.